Our first guest is the co-founder and CEO of Kodiak Cakes, that's headquartered here in Park City. Kodiak Cakes is a brand of high-protein mixes for typically high-carb foods like waffles, pancakes, and cookies. Sounds like a good deal. Kodiak Cakes recently received the Manufacturing and Consumer Products Award at the Entrepreneur of the Year Utah Region Awards Gala. That was just earlier this month. Joining us on the phone is CEO Joel Clark. Good morning, Joel, and congratulations on the award.
Good morning. Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that.
Now, you've been on the... I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, as you said, it was... We were thrilled to get that. That was really, really cool.
Yeah, you had some tough competition, I understand.
We did. Yeah, we totally did.
Doug tells me you have been on the show, Mountain Money, a few years ago. And I just wanted to give our listeners a little bit of background. Your company officially started in 1995. You took over as CEO in 97. According to an article I just read in Forbes, you hired your first employee in 2009. Sales were just under $1 million. Where do things stand now? How many employees and what are your total sales?
Well, so we're up to about 54 employees now. And this year we'll hit the 100 million mark in revenue. So we're pretty excited about that. And honestly, I never thought we'd actually even get close to that. So the fact that we're actually going to do that is pretty exciting.
That's very exciting. That's a huge benchmark, 100 million. Not many consumer brands get there. I know there's been a couple inflection points. Renee mentioned you were on the show a couple years ago. I think it was shortly after you were on Shark Tank. Clearly, that was an inflection point for you. Where were you in sales then, and what has helped propel you to this $100 million a year in revenue mark?
Well, yes, and Shark Tank was absolutely an inflection point for us. So that show, when we went on, that aired in April of 2014, and that year we did about $3.5 million in revenue. And now that just became a huge kind of exposure bump for the brand. And a couple of things happened that year. So we went on the show Shark Tank, and I think one thing that helped us, though, is that we had a lot of distribution with our products. So you could get our products in a lot of places, and including Target. And they mentioned Target on the show. And so that was really great because people were able to go and get it and easily go and get the product. But I think the other thing that happened that became another inflection point for us was a couple of months after Shark Tank aired, we launched Power Cakes, and that's our high-protein pancake mix line. Prior to that, we were selling always whole grain products. All of our products have always been whole grain and all natural, but when we launched Power Cakes, that was the first real mainstream high-protein pancake mix. And that just resonated with consumers like crazy. I mean, people just loved the protein. And then what it did is it brought new people back into the pancake category that weren't really buying pancakes before. So it became very incremental to the whole category, and that became the number one product. It became our number one item really fast. And at Target, for example, Power Cakes became the number one selling product in the pancake category by 20% that year, and so it just exploded and created this momentum for our brand that just has not stopped. And so since that time, we started innovating in other categories and building on the pancake success. And then we went into baking mixes, and now we're into frozen waffles, which we launched last year. And so all these products are really just seeing great momentum and growth.
Well, Joel, if you don't mind backing up a little bit, from what I understand, it was 1982. You were 8 years old, and you were going door-to-door selling your mom's pancake mix.
Yeah.
And then it turned into an official baking company, let's see, 13 years later, 1995.
That's right.
So walk us through how you went from 82 to 95, and then 95 to 2014, when you were in Target.
Okay, so 1982 was, my mom always had this dream of selling her pancake recipe as a mix, and she had this really great, really, really fantastic, from-scratch pancake recipe, and she always thought about selling it because she was really a natural foods pioneer. She was way into eating healthy whole grains. We were drinking green smoothie in the 80s before it became, you know, super popular. But she made these little homemade pancake mixes in brown paper lunch sacks and hand wrote on the bags how to make them. And it was kind of almost a for fun type of thing as well. We loaded up my little red wagon and I went around the neighborhood and sold these little pancake mixes to our neighbors. And I even got reorders. People calling me back saying, "Joel, I love that pancake mix. I want to buy some more." And we let it die. We didn't continue to pursue it after that. It was just kind of that one summer. And then,
hey, Joel, if I can interrupt, was that in Utah? Were you selling this pancake case and mix in 1982 in Utah?
It was, yeah. Yep, it was down in East Mill Creek, where I grew up.
Okay,
yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, that's great. So then, years later, so we kind of let that die out. And then years later, in 1995, my older brother, John, he was 28 at the time, and he went to my mom and he was talking to her about how he wanted to start a business. And she said, "Hey, why don't you do something with the pancakes? Why don't you make a product and a brand and go sell it?" And he loved the idea. So he's the one who took my mom's recipe and turned it into an add water only mix and, you know, used whole grains and all the attributes that she really was a believer in. And then he created the brand Kodiak Cakes, and he wanted something kind of rustic and wholesome and, kind of Western and something frontiersy, named it Kodiak Cakes, and he started selling it. I helped him right from the beginning start selling, and Park City was one of our first places that we sold it into. And so we each took a side of Main Street. We started at the bottom of Main Street in Park City. He took one side, I took the other side, and we started working our way up Main Street, going in and out of these gift shops and just, you know, kind of leaving samples of our pancake mix. And we started getting a lot of people, little gift shops, wanting to buy it. And it was awesome. And then little by little, we worked our way up into grocery stores. And then in 97, I took the company over, and my brother John came to me. He's like, "Hey, I want to go back to school. This is just a side project. I don't have time for it anymore." And so I took the company over. I was going to the University of Utah. I was a student there. And it was so Kodiak Cakes became a part-time thing for me. And actually, it was for about the next 7 years that I did it on the side and just bootstrapping along. So it was really tough. You know, those years between, you know, when I took over to, about 2011, I think, is when we first hit our first $1 million. It was about a 15-year process to hit $1 million. But it was hard. I mean, it was really hard to stick it out. And we almost shut the company down a lot of times during those years. And we finally started to get some momentum. And, you know, obviously, thank goodness, we stuck with it. But then 2014, obviously, a big inflection year for us. And it just kind of started this momentum for Kodiak Cakes, which is not stopping.
So yeah, well,
it's been a long haul.
I want to talk a little bit more about, you know, how you almost shut down the business a couple times.
Yeah.
You started in 82 going door to door. In 95, you're still a really tiny company. Your brother decides to go back to school. You know, that would be a natural point to think about. Maybe you're going to shut things down. I think that's one of the hard things with entrepreneurship. I mean, in 95, 97, when your brother went back to school and you're walking up and down Main Street trying to make things happen, if somebody had told you, "Hey, Joel, stick with this. In 2018, you're going to have $100 million in revenues," it's easy to stay with it. The hard thing is you don't know, right? So you're putting all this time and effort into it, and you don't know if you're going to end up with a goose egg or what the outcome is going to be.
That's right.
How did you get what was it in how you were looking at things that allowed you to persevere and to keep going?
I think one thing that I did, and I always wanted to do something entrepreneurial, so I was excited to, but you're right. The all of those reasons why I wanted to be an entrepreneur dissipated. You know, I think in the beginning I thought, "Oh, this would be really cool. I could make a lot of money doing this someday." Well, that went away pretty fast because it just became about survival. And then, I remember thinking, "Hey, that could be kind of cool to be an entrepreneur." You know, and then people are like, "Hey, that's cute. You run a little pancake thing." You know, so like a lot of I think the one thing that remained passionate for me was the product. I loved the product, and so I did remain passionate about the product. And the other thing that I would do is I would give myself like kind of these six-month goals. And so I'd say to myself, all right, I got to get these things done. I got to see these things happen in the next 6 months. And if they don't, I've got to quit. Because there comes a point where you're like, you kind of feel like you're spinning your wheels. You wonder if you're beating a dead horse. And you really wonder, is this thing going to even go anywhere? And I remember feeling like really nervous about my career building years and kind of wondering, am I wasting a lot of these years, into my late 20s, early 30s, and mid 30s even, before it even started to go anywhere? And I remember thinking, man, all my friends are progressing in their careers, and this is the time where you're gaining skills that are valuable that you can transfer from company to company and get paid for them. And I remember wondering, just, man, am I wasting my time? And so I'd set these goals, and little by little, they'd happen, and so I'd kind of keep with it. But I think that was one way that I was deliberate about what I was doing, and that actually helped a lot.
So the Forbes article mentions your company culture in that you have hired younger people, millennials, because that's who you're targeting your product towards, and they might not have the traditional experience for the roles you're hiring them for, but it seems to work. How do you make that happen?
Yeah, it's worked really well. And I think one thing in the earlier days when we first started hiring people, it was out of necessity because we didn't have the money to hire experienced people, that were later in their careers and had more and just would cost more, right, because of their experience. So we just didn't have the money to do that. And so I think, in a lot of ways, necessity, we looked for people that that we felt like could take on a ton of responsibility at an early age. And that just really worked out well. We just really learned to empower people and find people that were driven and that were excited about their career and building a company. And so we have empowered a lot of really amazing people at really young ages that have done some incredible things. And, you might be taking a little bit of a risk. At least you might feel like you're taking a little bit of a risk when you empower someone that doesn't have a lot of experience. But in our experience, it's actually worked out great. And you can coach people along. And now that we're growing and we have brought on people that are later on in their careers that have more experience. And that's actually been awesome. So now we have, even more, a more balanced workforce, but we still have a lot of really, really young people doing some incredible things. One example is in this Forbes article you're talking about mentions this, but one of the guys here, his name is Jake, and he's on our sales team. He's 27. He started here as our office manager, and he was still finishing up school, and he's just progressed so fast, and he's become just an incredible sales guy, and he's handling a lot of huge accounts, including Walmart, that we'll be starting to sell to later on this year. It's pretty fun to see people progress and do so well.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Jake, because I was going to ask you about a quote from the article where he was asked, aren't you worried about messing up? You don't really have that deep resume, and they're putting you in charge of this massive account. And he said, well, I do worry about messing up, of course, but we don't have a punishment culture. People have a lot of responsibility, but with that comes open and frequent feedback. When someone messes up, we go into a room, we talk about what worked, what didn't, and we move forward. Once people take that kind of responsibility, they rise to it. I think that's so cool and really empowering. I think a lot of employees, well, everyone would really like to have an employer like that. But then they also mentioned that Kodiak Cakes also has the guts to fire people who can't or won't empower themselves. As a boss, how do you tell the difference? How do you know when it's time to cut that cord?
We haven't had, luckily we haven't had too many experiences that way, but we have had a couple. And I think what we learned is that there are some people that that do really well with feedback and can take constructive feedback really well. And really make an effort to do something with it, to act on it. And if you really are willing to do that, then usually you can get through it, And people can work on things and improve. And it's not usually drastic, Usually it doesn't have to end badly. But once in a while, and there have been a couple situations where maybe you come across somebody who either isn't able to fix something, or doesn't want to or doesn't see the reason to. And I think that's where you kind of run into a problem, because sometimes those types of some of the issues can become toxic and affect other people. And especially if the mentality that is not, you know, if the mentality is completely against our culture, like, you know, if you're not able to empower, or if you don't believe in people, then that's where it can become a problem. And our whole entire culture has been based on believing in people, you know, really young people, believing them in them and empowering them and being really collaborative. And for some people, that does not come naturally, and some people just don't do that well. And often it's fixable, and, you know, I guess there's a couple situations where maybe it wasn't. But for the most part, I think people get into this type of a culture and they really thrive, because it's a culture where, yeah, you do. The other side of empowering and collaborating is you have to be really motivated and you have to take initiative, because you can empower somebody, but if they don't have a lot of drive and initiative, then that won't really work. And so we really do have to find people that are driven and that are motivated and that want to be empowered, and then it really works.
Yeah, it's part of the magic of culture. It helps you identify the people that should be on your team, and the flip side of it also helps you identify the people that maybe should not be on your team.
Yeah.
If you're just joining us this morning, our guest is Joel Clark. He's the founder and CEO of Kodiak Cakes, a local consumer products company. They make a pancake mix and have grown from $3.5 million in sales in 2014, and they're currently, 4 years later, on a run rate to do $100 million a year. Joel, I want to go back to Renee's point about millennials. She was talking about your workforce. Millennials, I suspect, are also a big part of your customer base. And I suspect that's part of where you got the traction on the protein side, just the new trends, people being more focused, myself included, on how much protein that we're getting in our diet. How you trademarked the name Power Cakes, which is a great name for a protein brand that has a pancake brand that has protein in it. And you saw this before the nation was kind of going towards this protein kick. What were you seeing? What were the tea leaves that you were reading that said this is going to be the next iteration?
Great question. We actually trademarked Power Cakes back in 2012, and we didn't actually launch it until 2014. And even prior to that, I had been kind of adding. I used to add protein to my pancakes, so I would eat our original Kodiak Cakes pancake. You know, I probably started adding protein back in 2009 or so, 2010, and I just kind of started reading more and more about protein, and I've always been into fitness and things like that, and so I started kind of reading about it and kind of feeling like I need more protein, and so I started doing that, and I actually noticed I felt like it kept me fuller longer. I felt like I felt really good about, you know, I felt well when I was eating it. And so Cameron, he's our COO, and he's also a co-founder. And he and I would talk about protein, and we started watching the trends. So when we first started thinking about the idea of adding protein to a pancake mix, at first we were like, I think that's a little too niche. You know, would most people buy that, or is that just like a product that could go into GNC type of nutrition stores? And that's how we felt. Excuse me. That's how we felt about it at first. And then we started to really watch the trends. So one thing, you asked kind of what were we looking at? Well, one thing we were looking at were Google search trends. And so we started watching those, like, for protein generally, and then we started looking at, like, protein pancakes and other types of search phrases with protein in them. We noticed, which was kind of interesting, we noticed that these trends started to really grow, because you can kind of see them over time in charts. And we noticed in Australia and England and some other countries that they were even trending higher than they were here. But then we started to see them trend more and more here. So in 2012, we went ahead and trademarked the name Power Cakes, and we formulated the product. But we still weren't totally convinced that it was going to be mainstream yet. And we thought, let's watch it a little longer, see how it does. And then in early 2014, right before we went on Shark Tank, we started to think, okay, this is the year we're going to launch it. And even Costco came to us that year, late 2013, and said, hey, we're looking for a protein pancake mix. They had been doing the exact same thing. They had been watching Google search trends and other trends just following protein. They came to us and said, hey, we're looking for a protein pancake mix. And we said, wow, we actually have one. It's formulated, and it's already trademarked. Like, we're ready to go. So we actually launched the product in Costco in January 2014, about 3 months before we went on Shark Tank. So we launched it kind of small, just in, like, the local region here. But it really started selling really well from the beginning. And then after Shark Tank, Target took it nationwide, and it immediately became the number one selling pancake mix in the category there right after that.
And Costco is pretty risky, as I understand it. When you were in Costco, you had just five people, but you had to go around and do the road shows at the Costcos and make sure that you had enough supply if the demand was there. But you had really no guarantee with Costco that they would keep you on. Is that right?
That's exactly right. Costco they're great. They're a great partner. But the nature of how they do business is tough. And it is risky for a small company because you only have one item in there, right? So you have one pallet space, but they can remove items and replace them really quickly. Whereas regular grocery stores might have, you know, three or four items of one brand. And it's a little tougher for bigger grocery or for mainstream grocery stores to take items out. It just takes them longer. So yeah, Costco is a little bit tough. But what we did, Cameron and I, and in fact our whole team here, when we were, five, six people, we would go around and do these roadshows, as you mentioned, and we did them ourselves. We'd go and basically set up a demo booth at a Costco building, and we would go and usually 3 days at a time. So we'd go from opening to close and work 3 or 4 days at these roadshows and just to sell pancakes and tell people about the brand. But I think that's one of the best things we did because it was really hands-on selling, and we got to meet consumers and really talk to them and get direct feedback on what they liked about our products and maybe what they didn't like. And so it was awesome, and it really helped us get established in Costco. And it's helped us to be stable in there.
And Joel, how did he handle the guy that kept coming back for free samples? Did he finally have to cut him off?
we always have those. But you know what? Usually I say to people, I'm like, hey, this is all you can eat pancake buffet. So, you know, come on back as many times as you want.
But they gave you good feedback. Did you really take that feedback and adjust your product?
Yeah, we did. We would, we would talk to them about flavors and, you know, different things that people would talk to us about or feedback that they would give us. And, we make adjustments from those, from roadshows all the time.
And
They're so valuable.
I'm guessing someone would come up to you and say, hey, I add this to your mix or chocolate chips or bananas or whatever, and probably
totally
turned into some recipes that you put on the side of the box.
Oh, my gosh, yes. And then we add them to our website. People do really cool things. And, in fact, people do things with it that we've never thought of. And we're like, wow, that is a really, really cool idea to make that, put it in the muffin mix or, you know, whatever it is. People do really cool things with it.
Speaking of side of the box, folks might be surprised. At least when I see your product, more often than not, it's a single serve product. Why is single serve such a big category for you guys?
Single serve has taken off, and maybe you're referring to our little microwavable cup item.
Exactly.
So we, it's funny. I got to tell you just one little quick thing about that. So we launched, for anyone who doesn't know, we launched these microwavable baking mixes in a cup. So it's kind of following this mug cake trend. And I was actually listening to NPR on my way to work one day. This is about 2012. And I was listening to these two reporters were doing a story about what you could make in a mug in the microwave at work. And they talked about how they made a chocolate cake at work in the microwave in a mug. And I was like, whoa, I never heard of that. I had never heard of it. That was the first time I had heard of the mug cake trend. And so I went to work that day, and I was talking to Cameron here. And I said, hey, have you heard of this mug cake trend? He's like, no. And I'm like, well, I just heard about it. Let's see if we can make pancakes in the microwave. So we microwaved our pancake mix in a cup, and it worked great. So we started talking about it. We're like, well, maybe we ought to launch muffins. Maybe that's a little more intuitive, you know. And so we launched Minute Muffins. And so we started developing it and launched that product called it Minute Muffins. And it just from there, it's just taken off. So we now have pancake mix in a cup, and now we have these, you know, we have brownie mix in a cup. But single serve, one thing that caused that to trend, which we were really thinking about the convenience angle, but the health angle has actually become kind of a big deal because it limits your serving size. And so a lot of people really like that because you don't have to make a whole entire tray of brownies or muffins. You can just make one, and then you don't have, you know, so you're really just limiting how much you're eating. So the portion control angle has actually become kind of a big deal with that product.
That's so true, because you don't want to bake, you're craving a brownie, but if you cook the whole pan of brownies, chances are you're going to eat the whole pan of brownies.
Oh,
so just
gosh,
cooking
totally.
One is, thank you for that.
Yep.
So, Joel, the single serve's a trend, the protein's a trend. What are some trends that you're excited about now?
I think probably one of the most exciting things we're doing right now is, and I mentioned this before, but we went into frozen waffles last year, and we kind of saw the same kind of need for 100% whole grain and high protein in that category. And that's trending like crazy. And in fact, it's been really hard for us just to keep up with the demand on those products because people really like them and they're selling really well. So that, I think, is probably the most exciting thing about Kodiak Cakes right now is kind of the frozen waffle business that we're doing. But really, you know, and as we look kind of beyond that, we're looking at where can we take 100% whole grains, high protein products that actually taste really good, and where can we take that? And so there's a lot of areas where we can go, snacking and all kinds of places where we could take that. Because I still think there's a big, even just getting people to eat more whole grains is still a big deal. You know, people know that they should eat more whole grains, but there's still so many of us that just don't eat enough whole grains yet. And if you can make a product taste really good and make it healthier with that benefit, then that's awesome. People really like that.
And what's the biggest challenge you're facing right now with your business?
I'd say the biggest challenge right now is production capacity, which is good, right? Because, I mean, we'd rather have demand really high and struggle to keep up with it than not having enough demand and, you know, not being able to sell enough. So, but that is our biggest problem right now, is just keeping up with the demand. Like, that's been pretty tough. But it's a problem that we'd all, you know, we're okay with.
And you're only here in the United States. You're not exporting anywhere. Is that right?
We do just a little bit of exporting, but it's really just through Costco. So we're selling into Costco, Mexico, and Costco Canada, and then a little bit into Costco Australia. But yeah, outside of Costco, it's just the United States.
And your headquarters are here in Park City?
Yep, we're over in Quarry Village. Just on the east, or sorry, the west side of Quarry Village.
And your production isn't there, though, right?
That's correct. Yep, the production is actually in Ogden. So all the production's there, but all the headquarters are here in Park City, which is a great place to work.
And if someone has been listening to us chat with you for the past half hour and they think, gosh, this sounds like a cool guy and a cool company, where do they go to find out more?
Our website would be the best spot, KodiakCakes.com.
And are you guys hiring right now?
We are. Yeah, we are. We've got, I think, four or five different positions open right now. So there is a link on there, too, for jobs. So, yeah, I mean, if anyone's looking for something, please, please apply. So we're always looking and continuing to grow really fast, obviously. So we'll have new jobs open up, I think, continuously.
Yeah, finding good employees, a low employment rate here in Utah, low unemployment rate. Yeah.
You know, before we let you go, I got to circle back to Shark Tank. They occasionally have these episodes where they say, where are they now? And the sharks are like, oh, I definitely should have invested in that. That was a deal that I missed. I suspect Shark Tank will be reaching out to you guys sometime soon to do an episode like that. Going from 3.5 million to 100 million in run rate annual run rate. I'm sure the Sharks are like, boy, we so should have done that. And I guess my last question for you before we let you go, I think it was O'Leary, Kevin O'Leary, that was just talking about how it's just a commodity and you're going to get squashed by the big guys. You know, what would you say to Kevin today? What was it that allowed you, and I think we've touched base on it, but just, you know, what would you tell him today? Why was he wrong?
I think one thing that we really did is we stuck to our position. So Kevin called us a commodity. And when I, on the show, I responded to Kevin, I said, well, we're a branded food product. And what I should have said to Kevin, and I've kicked myself from this, funny you brought that up. I should have said, Kevin, we're a branded, differentiated product. And that is so important because you can't go to market without a really unique, strong position. And I think sometimes companies underestimate that. But that's one thing that we really have stuck to is we stuck to our guns on whole grains and never went like white flour and stuff like that. And so we stuck to that, and then we built a really great brand where we've really worked hard to make the brand different and unique and appealing to consumers. And I think that's where Kevin missed it, is you can't get – because he thought, well, I can just go start my own with that kind of money that you guys are looking for. But you lose so much authenticity by doing that. You got to have a real authentic story and a real brand that has real meaning and products that are super differentiated. And then consumers really, you know, if it resonates, then they believe it and they love it. So that's one thing I think that I'm grateful that we stuck to.
Okay, well, great. We appreciate you being on the show. It was great to visit with you again. Our guest has been Joel Clark. He's the founder and CEO of Kodiak Cakes. Joel, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me, you guys.